Let's learn. Let's learn over here. We're up to Mizmor Mem. Mizmor Mem. We're up to a very nice few psukim on page 364. Okay, 364 pasuk zayin and ches. Zevach mincha loy chafatsta. Mayevsky. Okay, we're up to over here again. Let's learn over here. We're up to prepare. 364. Zevach mincha lo chafasi. Hashem says, "Zevach mincha." I do not want lo chafasi. So David says about Hashem, this is a very beautiful pasuk. A lot of nice memory chazal. David says about Hashem, "Zevach mincha lo chafasi." You, Hashem, have no desire for man to offer sacrifices. It sounds like Yeshaya. Yeshaya says, "Mi bikeish zois miyetem ramos chatzeroi." Who asked you to do this? To come to the Beis Hamikdash ben Kurbanos. The best thing to do is to listen to Hashem, to be observant of Hashem's mitzvahs. Zevach mincha lechafatz, az naim koriso li. You, Hashem, you have ears, korisa. Korisa sounds like a bris. You're koris, a bris. You forged a covenant. Okay, we have to see what that means. Oyle v'chatol lo yisha'olta. You did not demand a carbon oil, a carbon chatos. You never asked. So we have over here four different words for korbanos: zevach, a mincha, an oila, v'chato'ah. It is interesting that we call over here a chato'ah, not a chatos. Okay, this is a very unique expression. Lo sha'olta, there's lo chafatzta, and lo sha'olta. And in the middle of the first expression of zevach mincha lo chafatzta, and the second expression, oila v'chato'ah lo sha'olta, we have something that seemingly doesn't really fit into this pasuk. Oznayim korisoli. You, Hashem, were koires ears. Oznayim, the word korisa, is not really a word that you would put together with the word ears. A bris, the word vichorois imoi habris.
Does
Oznayim
mean a scale?
Here it says...
A scale?
It says he dug it.
Koris, okay, dog, okay, well, here's our pits, okay, the ear canal. Okay, it is an interesting idea, is that the way Hashem made man, there are pits. The ears are like, you dug this connection, this pit in the two sides of my head, which go into the brain, and...
You mean like orifices.
Orifice, okay, right, correct. Okay, so that's a good point you're making over here. Caris over here, he's translating over here to mean that he made to dig. Okay, interesting translation. Pasuk Ches, Oz Amarti, then I said, Hinei Vasi. David, after David says that Hashem, you did not demand from me korbanos, and you have dug pits, dug into my skull ears, then he concludes, Oz Amarti, then I said, Hinei Vasi, here I am. Behold, I have arrived. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing for the very first time. Hinei Vasi. Do they still do that?
Yeah.
They still do that? Yeah, they do, they do, they do. Yeah, they say the name, they say the name of the person.
Yes.
By the Yeshivish weddings, they still do it, yeah. They have these very long, elaborate intros, right? These extremely sophisticated, but do they actually say they say the name of the person? Okay, I'm paying attention. Hinei Vasi, b'megillah sefer kosuf olai. Now these are beautiful words. This word b'megillah sefer is a very, very important expression in the Megillah of the book. That is an oxymoron. Well, is that the right term over here? Oxymoron? Not really, but maybe. But a Megillah is not a sefer. They're two very different things. A sefer is a book. A Megillah is a scroll, like a letter. And that we know halacha, that Megillas Esther has very different halachas than a Sefer. A Sefer Torah.
They had Sefer and they didn't have Sefer. They didn't have books.
What do you mean? They had Sefer. What's a Megillah? It's the same thing. A Megillah, the only difference is in the Sefer generally, not according to everyone, has holders, Atzei Chaim. A Megillah only has, this is the whole Machlokes in the Gemara. How many? As one Atzei Chaim. Where? In the beginning or at the end? It has at the end.
Yeah.
At the end. Like a Megillas Esther. A Megillah is a whole big Shiloh. Megillas Esther should have, this, I don't remember. We have to review. But this is a very big, important halachic dilemma. If a Megillas Esther, Al-Pi Halacha, must it have an Eitz Chaim? Most of the Megillahs, 99% of the Megillahs that you see in this do not have nothing. No, not all have a handle. Not all have, no, so not all have, so some taco, I don't remember the sugi. It's a big sugi. It's a big sugi, it's a Gemara, it's in Shulchan Aruch. I don't review the sugi, but there's a big machlokes, exactly what is the halachic requirement of Megillas Esther? Must it have 1/8 chayim? I believe that many hold that it should. Yet, you go to shul, and when they lean from the Megillah, the Baal Kriya, he doesn't, usually there's no Eitz Chaim. It's completely empty. And that's not so simple. The Gra, if I'm not mistaken, the Gra holds, and yet the Gra Megillah have nothing also. I think the Gra holds that Megillah says there should have 2 Atzei Chaim, like a Sefer Torah. Why? I don't remember his lumbus. Okay, this is something you have to get back into, but that's just one example. There's another example of the amount of margin, the margin on the Megillah. So on a Sefer Torah, you should have 3 fingers on top, a blank space, and 4 fingers on the bottom. A Megillah Esther, it's on the top is 2, on the bottom is 3. There are different halachas. Okay, there are many different halachas. Let's say there's a spelling mistake, can you make a bracha? Yes. If there's a spelling mistake in the Megillah, you can make a bracha. If they're psulim, they are letters that are disconnected. The laws of a Megillah are very different than the laws of a Sefer. Okay, so there are 2 different terms. Now, besides the halacha of a Megillah and a Sefer, just the word itself, the concept of a Sefer has a much more a connotation of something that's much more robust. Look at Sefer Trei Osar. Trei Osar, what's Trei Osar? There are 12 individual prophets who have composed their words and they've all been combined together into one Sefer. Why? Because if each one would be a Sefer by itself, it would get lost. It would get lost because it's too small. So what do you learn from that? That in order for something to have a certain chashivas, there's a bare minimum. You go to a publisher and you want to go publish a book, there's a minimum. You know, we're not going to go publish a book with a hardcover unless you're going to print, I don't know, 100, 200 pages. Okay, the average book has at least 200 pages. Many books have at least 400 pages. You know, you go look at the average art scroll book. It's about between 200 to 400 pages. Okay, anything less than that, you know, you're running into problems. It's not worth it to go spend the money to go print hardcover and this and that. There's a pamphlet. The word Sefer has a certain flavor of something significant. The word Megillah. A Megillah is a kuntres, a little pamphlet you put on the table, you know, in shul, Friday night, they come and they put on the table a whole package of Pebulach. Okay? And so they're two very different words, a very different connotation. Over here, David is saying over here, Hinei Basi, the Megillah Sefer, cost of a law, so we have to analyze what this means. Let's do these 2 psukim. First, let's try to do all the everything today over here. Let's start with the mitzvah stuff. These 2 psukim, on page 364, Zayin Leichafatzi Hashem says, I do not want korbanos. A zevach and a mincha I do not want. So it says over here, Ein chachafet sheyechet toh adam v'yavi korban. Amazing translation. We would never translate the pasuk like this if not for the mitzvah zavid. It doesn't over here mean Hashem, according to the mitzvah zavid, Hashem does want the zevach mincha. Hashem very much. Vayorach Hashem esreach hanichoyach. This week's parsha, Noach built a teva after the marble. Noach went and he offered korbanos. Vayorach Hashem esreach hanichoyach. Hashem a lot of nachas ruach from the korbanos. So he's saying Hashem really does enjoy a korbanos, whatever that means. But what Hashem does not enjoy is that a person should sin, should do an avera that would trigger the need to of atonement of offering a zevach u'mincha.
So we call it
korban zevach. The word zevach is a catch-all phrase. A casual phrase, a general phrase, which includes all different types of kamanas. There is a chait, a chatos, is an osham, and then there are kabanas of an oila. But even an oila is mechaper on averis. Chazal say it's mechaper on a bittel mitzvahs asay, a carbon oila. And What about a carbon mincha? I don't know. Is a carbon mincha, I don't even call. Is a carbon mincha mechaper on any avera? I don't know. Okay, I don't remember. But zevach is a catch-all phrase, and the mitzvah stuff is something very fascinating, is that Hashem does not want a person should do an avera so that it would trigger the requirement to bring a carbon to bring a zevach. But it does not mean, that Hashem does not enjoy, does not want korbanos. Even if a person would not do an avera, it would seem that according to the mitzvah, there is a purpose, there is a function of bringing a carbon just for the sake of bringing a carbon. This is the big machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban in the beginning of Chumash VaYikra. Chumash VaYikra, what are the purpose of korbanos? According to the Rambam says something very shocking, is that Klal Yisrael were oivdei avodah zarah in Mitzrayim, and you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And they had a need to continue. This is what they were used to. This is what they were accustomed to bringing sacrifices to idols, to the sun, the moon. They didn't bring sheep, right? But you can't just take out overnight and someone who's an addict, you just overnight, it's not, you can't, what you have to do is a process. And the process was that instead of bringing this sacrifice to a god, a false god, bring it to Hashem. So if you take the Rambam at face value, it almost sounds like that there's really no purpose in as sacrificing animals. It was just a technique in order to wean off the Jews from idolatry. But this really, there's nothing about it. This whole thing doesn't make, has no meaning whatsoever. The Ramban, oh, he goes crazy. How could he say such a thing? Many Rishonim, they go ballistic. How could the Rambam say there's nothing? The Karbonos.
How about Karbonos before the base maker?
Exactly, that's part of the question. That's part of their challenge. Noach came out, one of the main questions of the Ramban, Noach came out of the Teva. He brought all Karbonos. There was no Avodah Zarah. Then the world was cleansed from Avodah Zarah after the Mabel.
Hevel.
Kain and Hevel. There was no Avodah Zarah before Enosh.
The
Avos were ready during the time of Avodah Zarah. Avram or Ivri, the whole world was Avodah Zarah. But what about Kain and Hevel? Kain, the first time there was a Vayikra B'Shem Hashem was Enosh. Os Chuka Chucha Likroi B'Shem Hashem. The beginning of idolatry began in the lifetime of Enosh. So what about Kain and Hevel? They brought sacrifice.
Adam Arishan also brought.
Adam Arishan, it's a Medrash. Adam Arishan brought a carbon to Hashem. So how can the Rambam say such a thing, that the purpose of Karbonos is only to wean off the Jews from their idol practices? What's going on? So all of the later commentators, they come to be Miyashev Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. The Rambam, of course, agrees that there is, it's multidimensional. There's a Hechre Inyan. But not everyone is shaykh to understand these things. The Hamoinam. Do we today, tell me, do you really believe there's anyone today alive who can you can really say they really understand the depth of what it means to bring a carbon? I mean, you know, we make believe, we know everything. Come on, you take an animal and you take its life. What did the animal do to deserve to die? Okay? You take the, how would someone like someone took them and brought them as a sacrifice? I mean, the animals have some degree of intelligence. They have some living force in them. Okay, the nefesh chaya. We know that animals have a living force. What does this mean? You take an animal and you slaughter the animal and you're forgiven? I mean, come on, what does that mean exactly? What does it mean? You go to a slaughterhouse. You go to a schlachthaus, you see them take animals, they slaughter. What's going on? What does this mean? Okay, so we make believe. We make believe, we understand that we're supposed to die. So this is zeh tachazeh. And we witness the act of losing life. It's a humbling experience. It humbles us. Okay, all right. If you could appreciate this, may you appreciate this. You relate to this. I don't know. It's very hard to understand this. And I'm not the one saying this. All the Gedolei Yisrael say this. We don't really know what this means. This is way beyond our understanding. So guess what? The Rambam came to the rescue for us. The Rambam says, you don't even try. I don't even try. Be realistic. The average person is not going to understand the secrets of this world, what it's all about. So for the average person, the Hashem didn't create you to trick you, to torture you. There's everyone, Kol Yisrael as a chelik in Torah. Not everyone can understand, can relate to the depth of every single thing. And there are many levels of understanding. And on the simplest level of understanding, we have to appreciate we live in a non-Jewish world, and there are goyim, and don't fool yourself and think that you're not influenced by the goyim. I always tell you, even someone who's sitting in Bnei Brak, in Koilel Chazoinish, and learning Yoimim V'Layla, and never ever saw anything outside the Dalet Amos of the Beis Medrash, is also influenced and affected by what's going on in Hollywood. Impossible. Because that fellow who's living in Eretz Yisrael, in Koilel Chazoinish, he has a mother and has a father, and he lives in a society, and he deals with human beings, and he deals with, and every person in this world is somehow affected by the mishigas that goes on in California, Hollywood.
Everyone knows Disneyland creatures, all the cartoons.
Everyone knows Mickey Mouse. And stuff like that. Yeah, but today you know things are changing because Mickey Mouse has gone woke. Okay, they had years ago Oprah. Oprah, they took her to, I don't know what her kavana was it real Shem Shemayim Oprah, or it was just for her show in order to get some business. They took her to Williamsburg, they took her to Chabad. She did like, everything, the whole day. She really delved deeply into the Orthodox community in Crown Heights in Chabad. She went there, Chabad got a hold of her. And it's very good because the Chabad women are very sophisticated. They're very, much more so than I think a lot of other Chabad women are very different, you know, than all other women. You talk about Chabad men. They're very different. Chabad women, I'm not talking about the shluchim. I'm talking about the average Chabad woman. They're modern.
Yes.
They're very modern. They're very different than the people, the women in Flapush. It's a different mahalach. It's interesting. Rabbi Kefet, he has a lot to say about this. Aaron, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Kefet has a lot to say about this, and it's so true. So she went there and she really delved in. She studied and analyzed the community, and I saw clips. I didn't see the whole thing, but one thing I saw was very interesting. Was she asked the kids? I don't even know who these superstars are. She asked them, "Do you know?" I don't know what she asked them. Like, do you know these famous? What are they called? Yes, superheroes, and also like by the gun, there are certain
celebrities.
Good word. Celebrities that basically every single child and kid in the whole country, in the whole world, sleeps in their mind. It's part of their blood. Okay, I don't even know who these things are. I mean, I know my Mickey Mouse and my Superman and my Donald Duck, but I don't know all these new SpongeBob. What?
Popeye.
So she asked these kids, do you know who this is? Do you know this thing? And they looked at her like, no, they never heard of this. And she kept on asking, Nochmo, she just rattled off in her sleep, like 10 different celebrities that every child in this country, they know on the tip of their tongue, and they know everything. And the kids looked like, no. And the expression on her face was like she could not believe it. Could not believe that it's possible in America to create a society where you can shelter children from this world. She could not believe it. Could not possibly believe it. And there's a lot to say about that. Okay, there's a lot to say about that. So how do we get... What? They know every. Don't worry. They ganz fine. They know plenty. They're the Amish. Don't worry. They know. No, they know. They know. Just like we know. They know, right? We have this nice little box over here. They also know ganz fine. But. So how do we get into this? So I was saying over here, everyone, but even those children who know from nothing, you're part of a society, a world, you're influenced. You're definitely influenced you go to the store, you go buy a product, you wear clothing. At the end of the day, there's no such thing as not being influenced by the goyim. So what you're just going to reject everything? The Rambam says, be realistic. You're part of a goyish world. And the goyish world, they worship. This is the way the world operates. They believe in whatever they believe in. And they worship these items. They offer sacrifices. So Hashem says, listen, be realistic. We're not gonna be able to take this out of you. But instead, channel that need and that influence for holy purposes. And that's a very, very, it's a very relevant lesson in today's society, because we're also influenced by Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse, and Popeye, and Superman. Well, you can ignore, you can make believe you don't. Channel it to something positive. You have that's the whole message of the Rambam when it comes to Korbanos. That's really the message. You want to be a Malach Elokim Tzavakos and go and look at Korbanos, the deeper meaning, go learn Bris Koilel, the Shechita, Kabbalah, Hailacha, Zrika, and spend your whole life learning Kachim, Zvachim, and Menachos, Bris Ketorah, Baruch Hashem. That's for Yechidim. That's not for the Hamoina. The Hamoina is not going to rattle off to you, all the Bris Ketorah and Hilchos Kachim. They're not going to do that. Ayin Panim L'Torah. Okay, we have two people over here. According to the Mitzvah, this is a tremendous Chiddush. Hashem does not want you. Hashem really wants Korbanos. What Hashem does not want is for man to do an Avera and trigger the need to bring a Korban. That's what the Mitzvah of it says. That's a Chiddush. Then it says the next one is, as Nayim Korbisali. David says, Hashem, you have dug forged ears for me. L'shmoyas divya Torah shehi toiva beinecha mizevach. V'chei nemar hinei shemoya mizevach toiv. Now is where David Mitzutz enters. Is even though Hashem, you don't want a person to sin and trigger a carbon, but what you do want is a person to listen to the words of the Torah. The purpose of the ears is to listen to the words of Torah. I saw this past week, a very incredible Vart, a Diak and Rashi. It's an awesome chiddush, not a chiddush, just an observation. In the beginning of last week's parasha, it says there that Hashem created the Mo'oirois Hagidoylem. Right? The Mo'oirois Hagidoylem. Mo'oirois Hagidoylois or Gidoylev, I forgot. The Mo'or Hagodol. The Mo'oirois Hagidoylem. And then, so what does it say? V'chayu l'mo'adim v'shanim u'lahavdil bein ha'yom v'vein ha'layla. I don't remember exactly the words of the pasuk, but it says that, so Rashi says, what's the purpose of the sun and the moon? What's the purpose? So Rashi goes through the pasuk. The purpose of the sun and the moon is, in order, use these objects to calculate when are the Jewish holidays. And then it says, also use it for Lemo'adim. Okay, first he goes to use, I don't remember if getting ready. You use it, the purpose of the creation of the sun and the moon is for the holidays, the Mo'adim. What?
What about timekeeping?
And then it says, and for also light, there should be light in the sky. So Rashi says, that's a side thing. In addition to it being there in heaven in order to calculate when is Pesach, when is Shavuos, when is Sukkot, it's also in Shemayim to give light. What? Ask the average person, every person, what's the purpose of Hashem creating the sun? Light. If there's no light, you can't see. And what else? By the way, we're also going to use the cycle, the sun and the moon, the yearly cycle, also to use the calendar for Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos. But that's not what it says in the pasuk. The pasuk, the order of the pasuk is the primary for purpose in the refresh. The primary purpose of the lot. The secondary purpose.
secondary purpose. See, this is what it says over here in this Rashi also, too.
This is an incredible, you can read the Rashi.
Hashem could have created man that he didn't need light to see.
So you're a very big philosopher, Mr. Moses. I never knew this, I never saw this in you. I thought you were a mathematician. Mathematicians is you know, very defined science. Philosophy is very abstract. They don't go together. This is kalayim. Abstractions and definitions. I hear what you're saying. You're saying very deep. You're saying Hashem could have made men. He doesn't need to see like an owl. We can be like owls. We can operate in the darkness. Like an Amazon. You ever go to Staten Island? You ever go and stand on the Amazon built like you've never seen before?
In the dark?
Yeah. First of all, the mamish, it's like building after building after building, these massive buildings where everything you get in the Amazon package, you know where it comes from? Staten Island. 90% of what you're getting is already stored in Staten Island. You cannot believe what that place looks like. I was there, my car broke down there. They had to come rescue me from there. Wow, you cannot believe what that place looks like. And in those factories, so they say, is there's no air conditioning and there's no lights. So how do you know where all the packages are? Robots. The robots don't need air conditioning and they don't need electric lights. They operate in the dark and they save on energy and on heating an incredible amount of money. You don't. Everything is stored in 100 degrees. It can be 0 degrees. No electricity. No lights, and it's organized through robots. Robots. They know where everything is, and they just retrieve it in the dark. Isn't that amazing? Look what it says over here. So you're saying very good. Hashem can make a world where you don't need to see. You can operate in the dark. But this Kedai, this idea. Look, it says over here in the pasuk. Yudal in the beginning of Bereshis. Vayom Elokim Yehi Me'oirois Birkia Hashamayim. What's the purpose? Lehavdil Bein Hayom Vein Haloyla. And well, the Me'oirois is going to be two Me'oirois. There's going to be the sun and the moon, and one will rule over the night, one will rule over the day. And then it says, what's the purpose of these Me'oirois? V'hayu Le'oisois Ulemo'adim Uli Yomim Vishanim, Rashi, Pasuk Yudalit, Vihayu Me'oirois. Okay, let me jump down to the part that we need over here. Vihayu Lim Oirois. First, it says over here, Le'oisois. It's going to be for what purpose? Kishaham Oirois, like in Simon Rahu Le'olam, when there's an eclipse. This is a bad sign for the world. Shenemar. Me'oisois ha'ashamayim al techos, would not be dismayed by bad signs. Va'asoischem, when you do ritzoin ha'kodesh baruch hu, inatem tzrichem lidoig min ha'puranos, ulemo'adim al shem ha'asid. This refers to the future. In the future, there will be festivals, Jewish festivals. She'asidim yisrael lehitztavois al ha'mo'ados, ve'heim nimnim l'moda levona. Now look at this. Uliyomim. Okay, Shimush Chatzi Yoim Shimush Chatzi Chatzavayim Shalim Vishonim. Okay, then he goes further. The calculation of years. Now the next pasuk says V'chayu Lim Oirois Birkia Hashemayim. Here we go. Pasuk Tezvav. Oid Zois Yishamshu. Oh, you know what else the sun and the moon will do? Oid. This also it's going to do. Sheyoiru lo'olam, it will provide illumination. First, the purpose of the sun is if the sun is an eclipse, it's a bad sign for the world. The purpose of the sun and the moon is to calculate when is Pesach. The purpose is days. I guess it means halachic days. You know how they calculate zmanim and a year and days. And what else? Oh, you know what else it's going to do? It's going to provide illumination. You know, it's like you have a door. What's the purpose of the door? Well, the door, we're going to make ceremonies by the door, and the door is going to be like an ornament, and it's going to do this. Oh, you know what else the door does? It's a sub that you go through to get into the room. You have an opening in order that you can get into the room. Besides that, it's a place where we put up a mezuzah, and we have a ceremony, and I don't know, all the other, you put up an exit sign if it's good for the Nick to make some money, you know, and this and that. Oh, the door also happens to serve the function that you can, that's how you get into the room. Because if there was no door, you could never get inside. This is crumb, right? This is not. The purpose of the door is, it is a way to enter into the room. Now, once already we created a door that you go into the room, you don't put up a mezuzah, put up an exit sign, so the electrician can make some money over here, and you'll have they make ceremonies by cutting, you know, a ribbon cutting ceremony. The ikur is its function, and yet in the Torah Rashi says, oh, the function that the sun provides energy, provides light, that's secondary, that's not even so important. Oh, I forgot to tell you, this is also what it does. Backwards thinking, no? This is backwards thinking. But that's what it says, in the pasuk. That's what Rashi says. So here's, well, what's the purpose of ears? Why do you have ears? To communicate, to listen. Mayor, when your wife screams, you have to hear. The purpose of ears was for a woman. So when the woman tells you something, you listen. Oh, excellent. Excellent. The purpose of ears to hold the glasses. That's the ikker. That's the ikker. Oh, you know what else the ear does? It also provides hearing, right? So along comes this pasuk. The pasuk is, the only reason why you have ears is to hear the words of Torah. It also will serve the function of just ordinary listening, ordinary communication skills of just existing in this world. The same type of idea. What is the ikor and what is the tafa? A whole different perspective. That's what the Mishnah David says. The Oznam Kodesh says, Lishmoyas Divrei Torah. The only reason why you gave a person ears is that to communicate, to listen. How much does a person learn? People who work the whole day. How much time you have to listen to Torah? Very little. You're busy the whole day. You're busy the whole day listening to communicate. This also it does. Lishmoyas Divrei Torah Asher Hi Toiva Beinecha Mizevach V'chei Nemar Hinei Shemoya Mizevach Toi Pasek Ches Oz. Next pasuk, Oz. Now, what is Oz according to the Mizbeis Matan Atayra Marti Hinei Vasi? And Tam Matan Torah, I said, David said, Hinei Vasi LeKabula B'Megillah Sefer. I have arrived to accept it. B'Megillah Sefer Kasher Kosev Olam B'Megillah Sefer Atayra Shah Marti Oz. I said, Na Seven Nishma. Okay, so David HaMelech over here is saying that I was present at the time of Matan Torah. This is a Messiah that every neshama that would be born was present at the time of Nasa, at the time of Matan Torah, and they said Nasa v'Nishma, Oza Marti Nevosi, I have arrived. Yeah, we only arrived because Moshe Rabbeinu woke us up. We were sleeping. And then Moshe dragged us to the mountain and we said, Hinei Vosi. Okay, Hinei Vosi, I have arrived. And B'Megillah Sefer Kosev Oloi, look at the Torah. What does it say in the Torah? It says, in recalling here, the term Megillah Sefer, according to the Mitzudos David, is a term that describes Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And that's very critical. We'll see in a few moments why. And it says there concerning me, that I, what Ikar Chosar Min HaSefer, what does it say there? That I said, Naseh V'Nishma. I accept what it says in the Torah. This is the way the Mitzvah Sevel of Shantapot. Let's see Rashi. Rashi is very similar. Pasuk Zayin, Rashi, Zivach HaMincha Aloi Chafatzti, B'yad Matan Torah, Kinyan Shnemar. Rashi is taking a little bit, making it a little bit differently. Mitzvah Sevel is very general. He went, really attached himself to Sefer Yeshaya, but he's now going to what it says by Matan Torah. Hashem had no desire that Klal Yisrael offer sacrifices at Har Sinai. Now we do know that at the end of Matan Torah they did offer the young men. What does the pasuk say? What is the Atzile Ha'am? The Atzile means the princes, but they're really first to the young people. They offered sacrifices, Reach nichoyecho asuya behar Sinai. So this is a very shocking Rashi, because every single day we say the davening, the shachris is and minchot kineged the tamish shel shachar, tamish shel ben aboyim. And what does it say in Parshas Pinchas that we bring the carbon tamid ho asuya behar Sinai l'reach nichoyach ishe laHashem? When we say the korbanos. Tomorrow, reach nichachit hishmeru lakiv lidmod of madrachem zehu yisher sher takiv v'lashem kivosim bnei shul asmim shnayim al yemelo asmim esakev zechadus elok v'esakev sashit asakev v'as asir esrif asolus v'nchabelo v'shem mekosis v'yisin ola asamid ho asuya behar Sinai l'reach nichayach yisheh laHashem. So it says ho asuya behar Sinai. It's explicit that the carbon tamid was offered at Har Sinai. That was when it was initiated, according to one opinion. It's machlokes in the Gemara. When it says Bahar Sinai, does that mean that from then on in they offered continuously every single day the carbon tamid, or just means no, they offered then a carbon tamid on that day, but you know the binyan of the base of the Mishkan did not take place for a very long time until Chodesh Nisan, almost a year later. So that's, you know, that's the dilemma. Was the what does it mean exactly? Ho asuya behar Sinai, but it says explicitly. So this is a very interesting Rashi. Rashi is telling us a historical fact. Although the Atzilei Ha'am, the young men, they offered sacrifice to Hashem, and they were criticized for that. Why? Vayoychlu vayishtu. They looked at Hashem. It's like when you do like you sit, you know, where's the popcorn? They were watching Matan Torah. Everyone knows that Matan Torah was given through Zoom. Everyone knows. What's the first thing you say? You do when you have started Zoom meeting. Can everyone please mute themselves? What did Hashem say in Matan Torah? Has kol bosar miponai. Silence. Has means silence. Has. Silence. Everyone, please mute yourself. And then when you're muted, you turn off the video, and what do you start doing? You start munching away. You start eating. It's disrespectful. How could it be that you're observing Matan Torah while you are eating? Vayoichlu vayishtu. They ate and they drank while they observed Matan Torah. That was a terrible avera. So what exactly did they eat? What were they eating? They weren't eating popcorn. They were eating korbanos. And even that was not proper. It's not a time now to bring korbanos. Maybe you can tie it together. Tie it together what it means. Okay, it says, let me go to Pas Mishpatim. Maybe this is a very important chiddush over here to connect the dots. Okay, in Parashas Mishpatim, at the end of Mishpatim, is where we finish off Matan Torah. Vayal Moshe, okay. Marei Kvod Hashem, here it is. Vayal Moshe v'Aaron, Nadav Aviv v'Shivim Mizikne Yishol v'Yiru, they witnessed, okay, doesn't say, this is to see, not a Shmona, Eis Elokei Yisrael, V'sachas raglov kemase livnas hasapir, the appearance of sapphire. Uche etzem hashamayim lo toyar, the essence of purity. And here's the pause that we need. The El Atzilei b'nei Yisrael lo sholach yodai. Hashem did not take the lives of the young people. The Atzilei here means the young people. Why would they be deserving to die? Because they sinned. What was their sin? Vayechezu es ho Elokim. They looked, they gazed at Hashem. Vayoychlu vayishtu. You don't eat and drink when you look at Hashem. That's disrespectful. When you're talking to Hashem, you don't eat and drink. And Rashi, in fact, says Hashem held back. Now, but later he did. Nadav Aviv died as a consequence of this. according to one interpretation at least, Rashi here says, "Hayu mistaklin boy belave gas." They looked at Hashem with arrogance. Mitoich achilo ushesia. Kach medesh tanchuma. V'unkelus oitergim kain. Atziloshen gidoilim kumo umi atzilecha kirosicha. Vayetzal min ruach sheish amos shesim shanhe. But therefore they looked at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Fine. Now I think we have an insight that is very important. This Rashi here that we're learning today in Sefer Tehillim is explaining that Hashem was dissatisfied, because it says here, Zevach u'mincho loichofatzta. Why were the Atzilei B'nei Yisrael eating? I never told you to eat. By the way, what were they eating? They were eating korbanos. They weren't just stam eating. They were eating Reach nicho asuya bahar Sinai. I don't want you. That's not a good answer, by the way, because the Reach nichoyach, those are oilos. The carbon tamid shel shachar is a carbon oilo you do not eat. It is completely burnt. Okay, so obviously they were eating over here not oilos. They were eating over here, I guess, shalomim. And it says vayoichlu. They were not eating over here the carbonos tamid. Impossible. Because again, that's a carbon oil. Carbon oil is completely burnt. Nothing of a carbon oil is eaten. So when it says here that the Atzilei B'nei Yisrael, they were eating and drinking, obviously they were eating and drinking a carbon shalomim. And Hashem was displeased. How do you know he was displeased? Look at the pasuk here in Tehillim that we learned today. Zevach u'mincha loichofatzta. You did not want this. You did not want them to eat and drink at Matan Torah. Rashi. B'yoy matan Torah, kinyin shenemar. How do you know that Hashem did not want? It says, V'yatayim shemoy tishma b'koyli. Only thing Hashem demanded from the Jewish people at Matan Torah is to listen. Nowhere by Matan Torah do we find Hashem giving instructions to bring korbanos. V'chein b'yirmiyo, who amir, ki lo dibarti es avoseichem. I never spoke to your forefathers and demanded from them to bring me sacrifices. And now we appreciate the pasuk in Mishpatim. They looked at Hashem. I never told you to bring sacrifices and eat at the time when I speak to you. Okay, now in the brackets it goes on from the Rash. If a man brings a korban, Amarti, I said, V'loi his Kaktim choyva lahachbit aleichem timidim umusafim. Now, this is an entirely different interpretation, different idea. It's a very powerful idea, an incredible chiddush what it says here. Einam el nachas shuach shamarti v'nasor ritzoni v'dovar muat. This Rashi is an utterly shocking Rashi. When we learn, let's say, we learn about give Hashem a nachas ruach. So in our minds, it means that's the ultimate. You give someone nachas. Right? You give your parents nachas. Everyone gives brachas. You should have nachas from your children. It represents the shpitz, the ultimate. Rashi here says that in the context of korbanos, Rashi says, okay, I don't know if we have to find the exact pasuk, but it means just the opposite. Yeah, it's a nachas for me. Very nice. But it's insignificant. Nachas ruach means, okay, it was a nice expression. It was a nice a goodwill, good, nice gesture. Nachas ruach just means a gesture. I don't need gestures. Where's the money? Where's my paycheck? Okay, you work for someone, and you come, okay, you owe me $1 million. Where's the money? Where's the money? Oh, when I come into the room, the balabas, he opens the door for me. You go first. Oh, very nice. Such a beautiful thing you've done. You're so kind, and you say, oh, you go first. That's a very nice gesture, but that doesn't pay the bills. Doesn't pay the bills. Nice gestures don't pay the bills. Where's the money? Where's the beef? Where's the food? Where's the mamashas? Yeah, yeah, very nice. You open the door. I walk in. Oh, you stand up for me. Yeah, yeah, very nice. It's a nachas ruach. It's a nice gesture, but it's insignificant. A korban is a nice gesture. But Hashem says, where's the care? Where's the beef? Where's the real deal? Where are the mitzvahs? Where's the humility? Where are you? Where are you holding your life? So instead of taking the term nachas ruach, like we commonly think that it means the ultimate, wow, nachas, okay? No, adarabah, a korban is a nachas ruach. It's a nice gesture. But in the big picture of things, it's meaningless. If you don't have the real makoy, the real shlemus of the neshama of doing what you're supposed to do.
Is it like tefillah?
What?
Is tefillah the same way?
No, tefillah is much greater. Tefillah is the real thing. A korban, what do? A korban, you just stand, you just slaughter the animal, put the blood on the mizbeach, and burn the meat and go home. What are you doing? Davening, you have to pour out your heart.
But a lot of times you just daven.
Well, we don't have a choice today. Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's saying is that the bringing of sacrifices is nothing more than a nice gesture. If you don't have the ikar, what is the ikar? The ikar is living a life of Torah, of being honest, of being humble, of opening up your heart to your fellow man and to Hashem and davening, being a real person. That's the ikar. Bring a sacrifice. It's a nice gesture. It's a nachas ruach. It's like telling me to go through the door first. It's very nice to make nice gestures. But if you're not going to pay me and you're not going to provide what I need, then who cares about all this? Same thing. You want to bring korbanos? You go to the Beis HaMikdash, you bring korbanos? I don't need your korbanos. Where do you live in Brooklyn? Are you honest? Are you a good person? That's what counts. That's how Rashi teaches here the word nachas ruach. It's a nice gesture, but let's not get carried away with it. The common man, when they say the word nachas ruach, oh, it means you're a malach elokim tzavakas. Okay, it depends on the context. But here, this is how he learns. Oznayim korisi li Rashi, leimar shimu, because Hashem said, korisi asisem chalulim l'shmoya. You made for me ears, hollow ears to listen. Now, how does Rashi? Aznaim koriz lemar saying, shimu b'koili, listen to me. Fine. Al korisi li, you made the korisi means like when Chol said, you dug, you bored these orifices in my skull. Oz b'shas matan Torah amarti l'fanachinei basi eilecha b'mo sores b'rischa na seve nishma. Now this Rashi over here is an explosive Rashi. It's kedai for everyone to wake up to listen to this Rashi. I don't. I'm just being as a joke. Don't get too serious. No, you don't have to wake up. By Matan Torah, everyone was sleeping, and Moshe Rabbeinu, he had to wake everyone up so they should come to Har Sinai and they should say Nasa v'Nishma. Rashi over here is telling you what is the translation of Nasa v'Nishma. Hinei Basi, when Klal Yisrael arrived, if only we had the motion picture of Matan Torah, it would be an incredible. Could you imagine just someone could go back in time with a smartphone and just take some pictures? A little clip. What did Moshe Rabbeinu look like? What do you look like? Well, what do you look like, Moshe Rabbeinu? I guarantee you, it's nothing we expect. He looked probably so different that we can possibly imagine. Okay. In any event, it says over here, what? May you think you look like you? What did Moshe look like? Like who?
No, Charles Heston.
Oh, in the movie. Okay, what does it mean, Nasev and Ishma? The translation is, Hinei Vasi, we came to Har Sinai with a statement. I come to you, Elecha, b'mosoires b'rischa. How do you translate those words? With the mesoires. What's the mesoires? The tradition? What does it mean, the mesoires? The mesoires of your covenant. The word mesoires usually has a connotation, tradition. I think that's a very basic, you know, I don't, it's not a precise translation, but the word tradition, somehow, it's in that realm of mesoires. Which basically seems, Rashi seems to be saying, and maybe I'm wrong, I'm just giving you a suggesting thing with you out loud, and is that Yadus was nothing new. It wasn't like, oh, here we are with slaves, with thoroughly, thoroughly ignorant. We don't know from nothing. We're just people who are just, you know, barbarians. And Hashem took us out of Egypt, and he's now, because of, we have good yichus, we have come good stock from Abraham. So Hashem's now going to make us into a nation, and he's going to work with us. He's going to train us. But right now, no. It appears that Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim, they were religious people. They were not mitzvah v'yoseh, right? But they. Chazal say numerous times, the Ovois were Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kula before it was given. Even Erev Tavshilim, everything. Oh, what does that mean exactly? I don't know. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it means exactly. But it means something, right? It means something is that the Jews already had traditions. They already had basic, a way of life. The Ovois, Leman Asher Yitzave, it says by Avraham Avinu, Leman Asher Yitzave es Bonav Acharav Lishmor Derech Hashem. It's the Farish Apostle. The reason why Hashem says, I love Avraham Avinu, is because Leman Asher Yitzave es Bonav Acharav, because Avraham is unique, he is novel. It doesn't seem that anyone in this world until this point in time went out of their way to be mechanech their children in their way of life. They were pagans, mishugoyim, and who knows what, and everyone did whatever they did, and when they have children, by the time the kids are 18 years old, you get out of the house, get your own apartment, go take a loan for college, and hope that Biden will forgive the loan for you, and leave me alone, and live your own life, and have nothing to do with you. Like in America. Ruba deruba. In America, you know, kids, once they reach the 18 years, they're gone. They're gone. And what shaykh they have with their parents? Yesh v'yesh. Okay, the more of a guy they are, the less they have what to do with their parents. Once in a while, they'll come back. When they need money, they'll come back to the parents. Can you help me out? Really, that's how it is. And that's the way it was from time immemorial. Along came Avraham Avinu. No, I'm going to pay for your kollel. I'm going to pay for your grandchildren's bris. I'm going to support you. I'm going to die in debt from supporting my great-grandchildren. It's all his fault. Don't blame Leman Asher Yitzave Esbonov Acharov Lishmar Derech Hashem. The parents, the grandparents, the great-grandparents take a very active role in the upbringing, in the life of their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren. It's a beferish apostle. It doesn't mean they have to pay for everything. Okay? It doesn't mean that.
Isn't that true in every religious
No.
society?
Is it? By the Christians, is it true?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
In the Christian society, real devout Christians, they're so involved in their children's lives, like by Orthodox Jews.
No.
There's no society in the world where the parents are intimately involved in the life of their children, for good and for bad, like the Orthodox community. Okay, either, you know, so even, you know, the grandparents, and then they hate.
Wait. You never heard of helicopter parents?
It's not the same.
You never heard of.
I heard the
moms?
Term. I heard the term, but it's not the same. They fly around with them. And Michal, give us
in. Like, in college, you can find out what they're doing.
They're very nosy. It just means by the goyim they're nosy. They're very nosy, but there's not. It's really more like a one-way street.
I think that's probably an overgeneralization.
Okay, I stand down. You're right to a degree, but I still maintain some of my opinion, and there's more of a two-way respect. By God.
For example.
Okay.
There's a tremendous movement of parents that have awakened to what their children's education has become.
That's because of what's going on in society.
So okay, but obviously obviously they're extremely concerned about their children. And it's a big movement.
But they're concerned about their children only through high school. They're very concerned. What are they teaching them in elementary school and high school?
We don't send our children to the army, so, you know.
But once these kids, the parents don't want their children being taught all this woke garbage. But once their kids, let's say their parents are, I'm assuming if their parents are secure in knowing that they're teaching their children elementary school and high school values, morality, they're happy. And once the kids finish high school, they let go of them. And Adraba, I'm not going to support you forever. Get out of here. Go get a job. Get out of the house. Get your own apartment. Do whatever you want to go do. And give me a little nachas. But the degree of concern, daigos, and mutual respect. Okay, a child is the biggest nachas. You go to a bris. So who do the children give sandakos to? Who they give to their friends, they give to their buddies, their boss at work. They give all the kibbutzim to their grandparents, their great grandparents. Devar mishutim. There's a mutual relationship between the previous generation and the next generation. I don't think that any came in the goyim. Yeah, it's true. The goyim don't want loniga l'rik neil l'vahola. They never had kavanah to have children that their children should be mishugoyim. No one had kavanah that did I ever imagine that I have a child that would put him in elementary school and they would teach him what they're teaching them now? If I had known this, I wouldn't have children. I don't want to have such creepy people in this world. I wouldn't even get involved in this. But if they're being taught, they're normal, like I am, normal people, then goes on to, hey, whatever. Okay, whatever it is. But David here is saying, Yinei Basi is the word Bamosaurus. So when it says Nasa V'Nishma, I think the average person thinks Nasa V'Nishma was like, you go to a guy on the street and you say to him, you know, I want to make a deal with you. It's like a fresh start. And Klai is, oh, Emuna, okay, you want to make a deal with me? You want to put me into a business? No, that's not Nasa V'Nishma. Nasa V'Nishma is not a total brand new blind faith of a new type of life. Rashi makes it very clear. There's a Mesoris. There's a Mesoris, which means Klal Yisrael B'Matan Torah. They were continuing the legacy of the others. It's not a clean break. There are two, there are the Ovos and there is Matan Torah. These are two critical moments in Jewish history. And we like to think sometime that Matan Torah was a complete severance from everything until that point in time. That's blatantly wrong. You don't cut off the Ovos. You don't cut them off. You daven, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Oh, but the Ovos were B'nai Noach. They were B'nai Noach. The whole world started new with Matan Torah. So the Ovos, who cares about the Ovos? It's not true. Matan Torah was a confirmation, was a commitment of the Mesoires of the Ovos. You don't hear that language. You don't hear, Matan Torah. Even normally you'll hear like the Briska Torah. Even the Zion Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. We have no Sheiches to that. It says in the Torah L'Sirtza, it says that the Goyim, our halacha of L'Sirtza is a different halacha than when it says by this week's parashah by Noach, Rakes Dimchem B'Nafshasechem Edrash. Chayeluchud v'chayeluchud, because we have no connection whatsoever, any mashu to the Zion Mitzvahs B'Noach. Those mitzvahs have been redefined with new rules, completely were kind of with shinui by Matan Torah, and there's no connection to what happened before. That's you get that flavor very often when you read the Svarim. Matan Torah was a severance from anything in the past, and now we're starting fresh. Rashi says that's not Nasa V'Nishma. Rashi, you can't ignore this Rashi in Tehillim. Tehillim, Perek Mem. Hine Vasi, I come to you b'mosores b'rischa. Nase v'nishma. Rashi, when did I come? I came oz b'matan Torah, amarti lefonecha, at Matan Torah. Klal Yisrael says we come to you with our tradition, and we're taking our tradition, and now we're going to make a commitment that the tradition that we've been accustomed to from the Avos, Lishmar, Derech Hashem. What is the Derech Hashem? The Torah. They already had the Torah. They knew about the Torah. Now, to what degree, I don't know. I don't know all the Pratim, but the Derech Hashem is the Torah. The Avos who Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kulo is the Messiah before Matan Torah. And Avram was... They did pass it on.
But obviously, the Shvatim and their children didn't exactly have
to carry out. So what does that mean? We don't know exactly what it means. But we can't ignore. We have a tendency to completely downplay the fact that it says in Chazal numerous times the Avos fulfilled the entire Torah. And it says in the pasuk that Avraham had something called the Derech Hashem. What is the Derech Hashem? The way of Hashem, a lifestyle called the Derech Hashem. Obviously, that means he was Mekayim the Torah. I don't know what it. I don't know. I have no idea. How do you reconcile the fact that the Torah was given much later, with all of the details, with the Maimar Chazal that Avraham Avinu was Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kulo, and Avraham had what was called the Derech Hashem, and he commanded his children, this is what you're going to do. Leman Asher Yitzav Ezvonav Yezbeisei Achrav Lishmar Guard the Derech Hashem. So now when it came to Matan Torah, it wasn't, okay, fresh, aliens, we know from nothing, we're going to start. No, Oz at Matan Torah, Hine Bossi, I arrived at Har Sinai with the Mesoira of the Avos, and we said we're now going to confirm, commit, and accept the Mesoira with a Shavua, with an Allah. There's no room to move. Nasa v'nishma is not new, brand new, Nasa. No, it's a confirmation of the old. And if not for this pasuk and this Rashi, you would be hard pressed to prove it. You can see, it's very logical to say this, but you have here the smoking gun, Tehillim. Oz b'shas matan Torah, amarti lefanecha, hine vasi elecha, b'mosores b'rischa, with the tradition of your covenant, which goes back to the Avos, v'chodoysim ha'bris. Goes all the way back. And what did we say at Matan Torah? Nasa v'nishma. We're going to do it. What we already know in the past. V'nishma. And we're going to listen, to continuously listen, it sounds like. V'dover zeh, and you don't believe me? It says it explicitly in the Torah. V'dover zeh kosav eidus olai b'megillah sefer b'toras Moshe. All right, we're out of time. I want to do one Maimon Chazal before we conclude in the middle. We'll go back in the middle. This is a very important. Omar, look in the Likutei Shas of Midrash HaTanim on the bottom, page 364 on the bottom. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's very important. Maimon Chazal, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, 4 lines from the bottom of this page, 364. Mishum Rabbi Ban Noah, Torah, Megillah, Nitna. Shenemar Oz Amarti Nevosi B'Megillah Sefer Kosev Olai. This Machlekes is Megillah Mesech Legidin. How was the Torah given? Was the Torah given in one shot? Or did Moshe Rabbeinu continuously over the 40 years in the desert plus sections? This is dangerous stuff. This is all about the courses of Bible criticism. Bible critics, these are a lot of stuff. People who are very into this, they analyze the style of writing in Chumash Bereishis. And the style of writing in Chumash Shemos and Vayikra and Bamidbar, and even in each Sefer, they analyze the people, very brilliant people, and they able to pick up nuances. And the Apikorsim will want to go say that different parts of the Torah were written by different people at different times, and this is very, very dangerous stuff. Chazal talk about this. Chazal don't ignore this. Don't be afraid. This machlokes in the Gemara was the Torah given in one shot. Zap. Hashem gave Moshe at the end of 40 years a flash drive. On the flash drive, download from the cloud the Bible.
I mean, originally was it written in one
time? What?
Was it written in one time?
Oh, was it given to Moshe Rabbeinu in one shot, one download? Moshe's a prophet, and I said, okay, sit down or stand, and now I'm going to give you through Nevuah the whole Torah in one shot. Is that how it happened? According to one opinion, the answer is yes. According to another opinion, no, no such thing. At different points in Jewish history were sections of the Torah put in writing. It can very well be that the Ovos, we don't really even know, who one person wrote Chumash Parshas Bereishis, or a section of Bereishis. Zeh Sefer told us Adam, who wrote the first Aliyah? Bereishis Bar Elokim. Who was the person who put that in there? Who was the one that had the vision, the Nevuah, and put it in writing? Was it Noach? Was it a Misu Shelach? Was it a Chava? Who was the person who put in writing the first Aliyah in Parshas Bereishis? Then Zeh Sefer told us Adam, Biyoim Biroi Hashem Elokim, Eretz V'Shamayim. Who wrote that? That's like a new section, a different angle, different perspective of Ma'aseh Bereishis. Who wrote that? Was it Kayin who wrote that? Was it Tuval Kayin? Who knows? Was it Noach? Was it Hevel before he was killed? Who wrote all these things? We don't know. But Chazal say, Megillah, Megillah Nikres. There is such an opinion that says that the Megillah, it was such an opinion that says is that the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael piece by piece. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote most of it, if not all of it, but he didn't write it in one shot. Moshe wrote the Torah piece by piece, little by little. At the end of 40 years in the desert, when Moshe took leave of his people, he put it all together. He took all of his Megillos and he put it together into a sefer. How do you know this is the pshat according to this man, the Amar? This pasuk here in Tilim, Perek Mem, Hinevasi b'Megillas Sefer Kosev Eloi. Manavshach. If it's a Megillah, it's not a sefer. If it's a Sefer, it's not a Megillah. How can you call the Torah a Megillah Sefer? That's an oxymoron. It's one or the other. They're very different. A Megillah is a pamphlet. A Sefer is a book. What is it? It's not, what, the it started out as a Megillah. Megillah is little pamphlets, little sections. And later, before Moshe was Nifter, he went and he put it together into one Sefer. And that's taught here in this pasuk. Like Rashi. How did Rashi write this Rashi? How did Rashi, Chumash Rashi? Rashi was the first one to give out these tzetloch in the shul, put on mamish, like you go to shul and you see on the table pamphlets, right? You have today hundreds of all the, you come Friday night and you see in shul, they put out all these different things every year, everyone has a little paper loch. Rashi was the first one to do that. Rashi wrote a commentary on the parasha, just on one parasha, and he went to shul, he did it by hand, and he put it on the table, and he disappeared. And he went to different shuls, and he put it on the table. And then Rashi would disguise himself in secret, he would make believe he's a beggar, and he would sit in the back of the shul, and he would sit there minding his own business, but secretly eavesdropping and listening and watching the reaction of people who came into shul to see when they look at the tzettel, to see what it says. Guy walks into shul, he says, who put this here? Picks it up, he starts reading. It says in the pasuk this, he starts reading, and he says, you know, it's not really right. And he listened, and he took the comments, and he improved it. He wanted to hear how people reacted to his parish, and he took their criticism and their comments very seriously, and he improved it, and he put out what was called the kuntresim. And no one knew, it became a legend, no one knew who is the person that secretly is putting out these things. They didn't have cameras those days. They didn't know who is the secret person putting out these papaloch on the table. And he went all over the world, all over the civilized world, to go to different shuls to do this in different places, to get a reaction from people secretly to hear comments. And he did this week by week. to pick up a reaction. How, and then he made, then he compiled it obviously into one sefer, and we have the Perush Rashi and Chumash. And there's a nice joke. I love this joke. I always told you of this joke. The legend goes there was once a freezing, freezing cold day, Shabbos, and Rashi traveled far and wide, and he was very, very cold and ill, and he came to a shul, and he put down on the paper his kuntres, the kuntres. And he sat there in the back, and he was freezing, and he's very cold. He was hoping someone would give him food, what to eat. Guy walks into shul, he reads the tzettel, and he says, he's reading, and he goes, I don't understand this. I don't understand what it says over here. What does Rashi want? What is he writing? What does he want? So Rashi in disguise says, Rashi wants a hot bowl of soup. That's what Rashi wants. A hot bowl of soup. Okay, Rabbi Yitzhak, we're going to stop over here. We'll do more tomorrow. Take a short break. I want to learn some halacha in Yom on the parasha. Let's see what we can cover. I want to do some, a couple of, we'll see how far we get.
Today's the earth side of Shimon HaTzadik.